Hi, this is Hannah Christensen, and I'm talking about pages 140 through 143 in Junot Diaz's book, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde. I chose this passage to read because it features one of the first appearances of the faceless man in Junot Diaz's text. The faceless man later comes, or around this time, comes to be an omen of danger in the story of Oscar's Dominican family. It usually signals the imminent operation of what Diaz talks about as being the fuku through Trujillo's machinations. Here, Bailey has recently seen the faceless man for the first time in the course of her return from Samaná, and he appears to her again when the secret police arrest her on the orders of the gangster's wife. The faceless man is actually kind of an interesting one in a lot of literature outside of this. I remember when I was younger reading The Phantom Tollbooth and being really scared of the faceless demon that shows up now and then there. I haven't read very much Jung, but I know that the faceless man is also kind of a Jungian archetype that has to do with death and the unknowable limits of the human universe. He's human-shaped, but you can't see his face, you can't recognize him or understand him. I think that the faceless man is particularly important in Diaz's text because it corresponds to a set of blanks and anonymities that here evoke the nature of social repression under a dictator, but I think are also relevant to repressions that later happen, society enacts upon Oscar and upon Lola. The dark forces in Diaz's novel are always nameless. They're disguised under an alias or the blanket identity of a force like Trujillo's. Here, the thugs that seize Bailey are stereotypes. They're two huge men with matching pompadours. They're just part of the scenery, and then they become Elvis 1 and Elvis 2. They're never really named. And then there's also the faceless man in the car. Similarly, the gangster and his wife are generally nameless. Here, she introduces herself by saying, "Soy Trujillo, I'm also Dionisio's wife," not by her own name. The gangster, who usually isn't named, is named here because in this situation, he's kind of a positive figure. He's sympathetic to Bailey, or at least she thinks he is, at the end of the passage when she says, "I want Dionisio." Generally, he's just the gangster, because even though Bailey loves him, we kind of see him as a dark figure, part of Trujillo's regime and of the kind of larger forces that are oppressing Bailey in society. Appropriately here, it's the dissolution of the captors' identities, the loss of their kind of accountability, that's so chilling. When she turns and sees the faceless cop, she becomes tranquila, and when she thinks she's going to be able to set the Palacio Peking crew on the gangster's wife, the wife has disappeared. In passages like this, Diaz kind of indicates what might be either magical realism or maybe just a result of Bailey's fragile mental state. He notes the dissolution of these enemies in italics, so as to like highlight their dramatic mystery and emphasize the unknowability of their kind of faceless evil. The faceless man recurs later when we learn about Bailey's parents. Socorro has nightmares of the faceless man before her children are threatened and her husband are arrested. In fact, the faceless man comes to be specifically the face of Trujillo's dictatorship in the novel. It's eminently appropriate in two ways. First, the impossibility of naming Trujillo in conversation for fear of bugs or listeners. You can't voice complaints about a dictator. They have to be framed against kind of an anonymous repressor or even coded, like in Harry Potter when they talk about he who must not be named instead of Voldemort. In any society of fear, the name of evil takes on a lot of power. The dictator becomes nameless and thence faceless. Along these lines, Trujillo in this novel is everywhere evidenced in previously trusted confidants. In a society where anyone could be the enemy and thus the true face of the enemy is unknowable, any friend or neighbor could lose his familiar face and be transformed into an informer. We see this when Abelard is talking to his neighbor Marcus, who we later discover to be the one who betrays him to the secret police, and Marcus's face is hidden. It becomes an absence on 221. So Trujillo's evil, unlike Trujillo himself, is nameless but ubiquitous. It's nowhere identified, but everywhere implicit. In light of the suggestion that Abelard was killed for writing a book about Trujillo's supernatural origin, we might even posit that there's a way in which Diaz conflates Trujillo with the mythic archetype of the faceless man. Maybe Trujillo in the novel is death or murder or the devil or whatever the faceless man is. Although the faceless man serves in the family stories as a figure for dictatorship, Diaz makes more complex use of blank spaces in the stories of his contemporary characters. Near the end of the novel, especially, impossible declarations or profoundly consequential lines are indicated by dashes or underscored spaces rather than by actual words. I'd like to suggest that the faceless man is kind of a primitive archetypal evocation of evil, but that Diaz complicates his reading of evil in the contemporary portions of the story. There are repressive social forces acting on Lola and Oscar, just as there are in Abelard and Bailey, but they're more sympathetic, less centralized, more difficult to parse. Diaz indicates the impossibility of articulating or defeating these forces by the use of blanks in his text, like on 327 or 329 or 301. And the blanks both surrender to and defy the pervasive evils that face the modern protagonists. I hope that we can talk about this more in class, about how Diaz kind of makes use of the unspoken in the novel.